Okay.
Alright, I've set this to mono, which is hopefully a smart move.
Yeah.
I've noticed in the past I like move a little bit around the microphone and it actually picks up this kind of left-right sway a little bit.
Yeah, and also makes a bit tidier.
We've always done mono, haven't we?
Sometimes I just... Player 2, Pixelcast 11. Try though I might, I cannot get the number 3 to fit into 11. I am actually not that great a mouse, but I don't think it's my fault in this case. I think it actually just doesn't fit.
It's a prime number.
I was going to say they're both prime numbers.
Yeah, so...
Look at how talented my cast is. Anyway, my name is Tim Henderson, and my main talent that I'll be trying to revisit now is the ability to grow semi-Keanu Reeves hair.
No one could do Keanu here.
Not quite. I've actually been looking at photos going, could I do it? I kind of got close for a not quite Asian dude. But yeah, no one can match the Keanu Reeves hair. Anyway, we have already... that's actually not as off topic as possible. We are recording this post a couple of E3 conferences. That's obviously what we're going to be talking about. I am not alone, obviously. I'm joined by two fine gentlemen, one of whom got up way too early this morning or maybe didn't go to bed, Mr. Matthew Hewson.
Hi. It wasn't that bad, actually. The conference schedule's not as bad as it has been because Sony dropped out, so there's been a bit more room for people to not be at stupid fucking o'clock. So it was 6 o'clock this morning, but yeah.
Yeah, I've always been happy to just see them when I wake up. I had 2 exams today, so I literally did not watch anything until like 5 in the afternoon.
And how timely is it that today is also a public holiday?
It worked well, didn't
it? It'd be great in Australia. If I was in Australia, if today wasn't the beginning of my like end of first semester exams. I had to try and remember like 100 kanji in the space of half an hour.
Well, that wouldn't have helped you at E3, to be honest.
It would not help me at all. I ignored E3 until the afternoon. Anyway, that other voice we're hearing somewhere in the background there is Ken Lee.
Hello, hello. I'm knackered, so...
E3 and kids. Yeah, let's get this going. We're going to start off in cyberspace. Matt, you've been playing blockbusters with your face thing on.
Face thing on, VR, blood and truth. This, for people that don't know, is by Sony's London studio. If you've got a VR system, they did the little... there was a little crime part to the VR Worlds disc that you got. So you had... There was a little in-game, mini-game where you had a couple of guns and you could shoot a bit and there was a little bit of a story. So this is kind of that idea, but fleshed out into a full game. The game's about 5 hours long. It's... a lot of fun. There are a few little like VR issues with it, but essentially you're playing through your own London crime caper movie. You're a soldier. You've come back from Afghanistan. Your family's apparently a bunch of crooks, and your family gets tried to be taken over by another mob family, and you know you don't stand for that sort of shit and. Take them down with extreme prejudice. So that's the essence of it. It's got a couple of recognizable faces in it. One of the guys from the early seasons of Arrow was in it. You know, some of those actors that you kind of know when you look at them, but you couldn't say their name for your life.
Yeah.
Those sort of actors. But it's really the production values on this thing are top shelf. Like Sony have really thrown the dollar bills at this one. This is the best looking VR game I have played that goes for realism. Like obviously you could make an argument.
Astrobot looks pretty good, man.
Yeah, you know, and you can say these other games that look great in Tetris Effect and you know things like that, but they're not. This one goes for that realism, and it really is the first game that's kind of captured that being in your own action blockbuster movie. And the VR headset and the VR controls are really, really good for the most part. So you don't actually walk; you look around the room. And see where you want to go, and there's little targets that you can press a button and you will move to that target and you're in cover sort of thing. So it's almost a cover-based shooter. But it recognizes you in cover. So when you stick your head out, you're out of cover. When you duck your head down, you're in cover. So, you know, smart little things like that.
Kind of like an advanced light gun game?
Yeah, essentially a really advanced light gun game. So you've got your two move controllers. They can be single-handed weapons in each, or they can be a two-handed weapon, like a rifle or an assault shotgun or something like that. I found that the when you use two hands, that's when the VR's not quite up to task in tracking. So when you're holding a two-handed weapon, you can actually look down a sight, but getting the sight to line up with your eyesight is problematic. It's like it just doesn't quite have that refinement it needed. But forget about it. Just grab two pistols, a couple of sawn-off shotguns, whatever. It's a lot of fun. You have to manually reload, so you've got bullets on your chest. So the shotgun's super satisfying, the sawn-off, because you flick it down, you grab two bullets off your chest, you jam it in, you flick it back up. It's all these cool little things you see in action movies that you get to do, and they've really, really done it well. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I wouldn't probably go back and play it again, because, you know, you kind of know the beats. As far as an interactive movie goes, this is top shelf. I kind of feel like... Do you remember Rebel Assault, the Star Wars games?
That was terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. But this is kind of following that same concept with obviously a lot better production and things like that and being in VR. But that concept of being an interactive movie. And that's really what it is. And I my hat's off to them. It's a really promising sort of game to play in VR to think, you know, this is pretty still early on in VR tech. And if they're getting it kind of this right, this early on, that it shows that perhaps there is future to this technology. You know what I mean? So it's really cool. And it's not too expensive. I think it's like that mid-range $54 sort of mark for a AAA game. That's pretty good, especially for the length of time you get. But otherwise, I'm quite hopeful of it. I love the voice acting and that whole Guy Ritchie kind of British gangster feel, because British gangster movies are clearly much better than most American gangster movies. It's a lot of fun, and I strongly suggest if you've got a VR to perhaps consider picking it up. And I'm sure, being a Sony title, it'll be on sale in one of their, you know, sale days that they have for all the PlayStation products, so it's well worth picking up. Thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah. The second you mentioned the move controllers, which I don't have, so this is kind of irrelevant to me, and I don't think I see them buying them, is like, oh man, if you do punches and stuff, I kind of just want a Jason Statham's VR simulator.
It is almost like those early Statham movies. Like, there's a lot of early, like, Guy Ritchie or The Transporter, that sort of feeling to it. It's, yeah, like a Luc Besson movie or something like that. It's a really cool use of VR, and you know, it just brings a grin to your face, and it's well done. You don't get any motion sickness. It caters for that really well, so people that struggle with that sort of thing should be right. I'm not going to say 100% will be right, but you know, I mean, I struggle with some VR games, and I didn't feel any problems here, and I played it in some quite long stints. So
yeah, I'm starting to wonder, we're going to have, like, just action movie is going to be the theme through line.
It totally for this. Should be how it's sold, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, for our entire podcast, though, because we open with Keanu Reeves, who is somehow probably going to become, like, the definitive action star, which nobody ever would have guessed during the Bill and Ted days. We've gone to this, and
Well, he was in the Matrix movies, so...
I mean, Matrix was some... It's like Soldier, but like when it was him and like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you wouldn't say that Keanu Reeves is going to become.
Whoa!
But John Wick is the hardest dude.
Yeah.
But anyway, the whole point of this is because I've finally, in the last couple of days, had a little bit of time to actually play stuff, and I've been playing Rage 2, which is effectively not Mad Max the video game.
Yeah.
Based on what
With
some people,
more pink.
A bit more pink. Actually, not as much pink as I was expecting.
No, not as much pink as New Dawn.
Considering how much was like in the trailers and how they were trolling a lot of the people who were complaining about the pink on Twitter, which I honestly probably enjoyed more than I should have. But, yeah, they sure were true to their word with this whole, if you're going to play in Pro or X, you're going to get 1080p. And it looks actually more smeary than I was expecting. Like, not everything I play is pro-optimized, but something about this looks a little bit Vaseline. But you get off because it's super. At some point, you're like, on one hand, I'm not sure this needs to be an open world game.
Yeah.
On the 100%. Other hand, it is interesting to play an open world game on a console that is running this smoothly.
Yeah, yeah. I find it really funny, Rage. It's certainly that kind of, does it need to be open world? Because a lot of it's just fucking filler.
I mean, it is a wasteland. They kind of have that to fall back on. There's a certain...
Yeah. But the moment-to-moment stuff is super enjoyable.
I think it would have been I think it's a good game that could have been a fantastic linear shooter.
Yeah, yeah. If they had just stuck with Doom and put, you know, Rage 2 as Doom, I think it's a winner because the moment-to-moment gunplay is the
start. It feels great. Yeah. It feels really good. I mean,
fantastic.
It is. I forget the shotgun now. I hope I can get better range for it, like down the upgrade tree. But can. I basically got. Yeah. I'm talking about the shotgun. I'm talking about something better, which is at some point early on for me at least. You get the ability, or you can unlock the ability through the slightly too convoluted menus. I think they probably could have streamlined.
Yep.
They've got a lot of different upgrade paths, and maybe they could have just had one big tree. But whatever, I can basically now blow up red barrels with my mind.
Mm.
And that That's is something cool. that I now feel like has been missing from every first-person shooter ever. I'm hoping the range gets farther because there's going to be something very, very satisfying and overpowered, but still very satisfying.
It does, and it gets quicker too once you get further down the tree.
Yeah, I've got the first speed up. Like, the idea that you could just like make those barrels blow up out of nowhere, it seems incredibly cool. But it does some really smart... Because, I mean, this game is openly stupid, which is exactly why I bought it. I just wanted something that was fun, dumb, and, like, fast-paced and violent. And it... Aside from the, like, wandering around the desert, it ticks those boxes. But one small thing, like, I really appreciate early on, completely not realistic, but very helpful, is, like, when you actually kill a person, like, a little pink skull, like, flashes in the middle of the screen. And it's a very, very small touch, but man, it is, like, it helps with just, like, the speed and, like, the snappiness of the gunplay to have such a clear kill indicator.
Yeah, to move on, you can move
like,
on.
It's like, okay, stop pumping bullets into it, move to the next guy. It's subtle, but I think it really affects the pace of the gunplay quite significantly.
Yep. And once you unlock the tree, I think, I guess I'm probably, I don't know, 15, 16 hours in.
You're definitely deeper than I am.
But once you unlock a lot more of the tree, and I've been wandering around and unlocking a whole bunch of stuff, you kind of do feel a little bit overpowered. But it's in a totally cool way, though.
I feel like this game is an okay game to be overpowered in.
Yeah, yeah. It's like sometimes you think, all the challenge gone. It's no fun. But the fun here is getting creative. It's almost like that old Just Cause kind of motto where you get... And funnily enough, it's made by Avalanche. Where the fun's made by you playing with the tools they give you. Not so much the challenge from the enemies or the environment. It's having fun with this kind of sandbox.
It's not can you kill them all, it's how can you kill them all.
Yeah, exactly. And it feels like Bulletstorm in a lot of ways, in that sort of sense. It's not quite gone down that scoring path that Bulletstorm did, but you know, it's definitely a lot of that in there where it's about, you know, mixing things up and having fun with all the powers and all that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a make-your-own-fun game, I think.
Yeah. I will say that I've only got a 2.1 set up. I don't have any rear speakers, but the audio information in this game is fantastic. Like, it's up there with, like, a very small handful. Kojima's stuff has been very good with this, where even with only two speakers, it seems like you can hear stuff behind you.
Yep. Well done on the audio design. Well done on the production in everything. Like, the production level of the game is super high.
Except for the character face animations.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you've got the very typical open world stilted delivery happening, but I guess that's kind of outside of like a first party Sony title of this scale. Yeah, it's basically to be expected.
Yeah.
But no, I do think this game is going to come and disappear and nobody's going to remember it at the end of the year. And then occasionally someone will go, hey, remember Rage 2? And then people will be like, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like that perfect game that you grab on Steam sale and be super happy with it and then never play it again.
Hmm. Well, they did have an E3 trailer today.
Yeah, with more stuff coming through.
More Rage 2.
More Rage 2, and it certainly did look like more Rage 2.
Which, yeah, where I stand at the moment, is fine. Like, I'm enjoying it a lot. I don't... Well, it could be my game of the year, only because I've played bugger all that's new so far this year.
Wow. That is a low bar.
Game of the year through lack of options.
Pretty. I don't know. I've now my pre-order down on Death Stranding, so...
But. Yeah, because I don't think you can give a game of the year if you've only played one game in the year.
Yeah, you can. It's like it's like Homer Simpson going to space, man.
Last one is Stephen Bradbury, that.
Yeah, he still got the gold medal.
Yep.
Didn't change anything. Still has that gold medal. Anyway, yeah. We want to keep this short at the front, so we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we've got Microsoft and Bethesda to go over.
And
we're recording this before Nintendo.
Oh, and Devolver, yeah.
And Devolver, not to be forgotten.
And then a whole bunch of other trailers and news bits that's been coming out.
Yeah,
spilling.
And some of the stuff that's leaked out of Sony, but whatever, we'll take a short music break, and when we come back, all that.
For the first time, I will look into your eyes. In the summertime,
E3 is happening, has probably more or less happened as far as you're concerned by the time this goes live. Pre-E3 has happened, and I actually want to start with that first, because Sony has, you know, bowed out effectively, but it didn't stop them from dropping a release date that I did not expect coming, a few days beforehand. Along with a trailer with a lot of ladders in it. We're also joined by Paul. So Paul, I'm going to ask, what is your opinion on ladders at the moment?
Hi everyone, I'm late to the podcast, and sorry it's my fault. That's a lot of ladders.
I think it's just one ladder.
One big ladder.
That he uses lots of times.
Very practical ladder.
Have we even mentioned the game yet? Death Stranding is weird as shit.
wait, you know, the only thing that's weirder than the game is Kojima's tweets about it.
Yep. Trying to explain. It's not a stealth game. It's about...
It's a Strand game. Strand action.
That dude has some...
He needs to shut up.
That dude has some amazing drugs. Honestly. Special
100%
consumer
agree.
Drugs. No one else gets them but him.
So, yeah, there's a lot of ladders in it, but I don't know. I don't know.
It could be interesting.
I was trying to say something really profound there, but I just had absolutely nothing. And I think most people are in the same boat. It's just, this game doesn't make any sense.
The thing is, I mean, with especially the later MGS games, MGS 5, it was a game about systems, like you make your way through all these environmental world systems. So it'd be interesting if Death Stranding is a bit of that. So in terms of there is a world and there are enemies and they roam about and you've got these tools and you do whatever to... You can stealth it, or you can fight people, or...
Build a ladder and climb over.
Or come up with really interesting
honestly,
solutions.
I would take the ladder over awkward, Bethesda-style hopping up mountain ranges to move around an open world.
That's right. So it could be some interesting things here, like really creative, obtuse, out-of-the-box type things, which is what the best parts of MGS, especially the later MGS games, are.
I've got the one thing I've got really worried about this is, Kojima's always had Konami kind of there in the background, and it's, this is not an argument about Konami being dickheads, they clearly are, but there was some sort of oversight to Kojima.
Some editing.
Some you know, editorial voice. But I worry that now Sony have given him a blank check and said, go nuts. He has literally gone nuts.
We're assuming it's a blank check. Like, I expect there has to be some checks.
There would be
balances.
Some limits, but I think they've given him a lot more freedom. And it kind of makes me feel like, you know, Baz Luhrmann, talented director, made some amazing movies, and then the Australian film industry gave him a shitload of money to make Australia, and it was just... like a failure because he went too far and had no one pulling him in. And I think there could be something like that here.
The weirdest thing about the Kojima case, though, is that with more money, he's actually gotten the game out in a timelier fashion than any...
Yeah,
let's put this out of proportion, but any previous...
I did not see it coming out this year.
No, I didn't either.
That blindsided me.
No, I think the general consensus was that this was the last of the three left, so being The Last of Us Part 2, Ghost of Tsushima, and this. Most thought this was probably the last of those three, and all of a sudden it's first, with no sign of which one of the other two is going to be.
I love the subtext there, which is Last of Us 2 is coming out in February, March.
Yeah.
That's my gut feel says that, but I mean... you couldn't rule it out because in the case of Sucker Punch, it's been since 2014 that they put out a game. So they could be close.
I think I think even if it's ready, though, Sony are not going to put those two games out side by side.
No, Sony are pretty good at spreading their big guns out to not compete with each other.
But what's your bigger Christmas blockbuster? I guess the question becomes probably the PS5 has a big part in... like the timing of that probably has a big bearing in terms of what game releases and when, but... I mean, Last of Us is, I think, it's not even arguable at all that it's the bigger of the two.
It is, and I suspect it's going to come out before people are thinking too heavily about the PS5.
yeah,
possibly. Yeah. That's what happened with the original game.
In any case, though, I think it looks cool. I'm actually super excited to see people discovering this game. But a part of why, aside from the fact that it, like, happened a little bit before E3, a part of the reason I wanted to, like, open with this, because it was a Kojima Australia as well, and, like, you had all these actors at the end, but how good was it when CD Projekt Red managed to out Kojima?
Keanu Reeves.
Oh, my God!
And the crowd went nuts.
Not just the crowd, everyone went nuts.
Everyone went nuts, dude.
They were more excited for Keanu Reeves than they were... The thing is, it
makes me so happy because, well, I mean, Keanu, he's not the most talented actor in Hollywood, but he seems to be, like, the most legitimately down-to-earth dude.
Genuine person, you know.
A better person than I am, and it makes me so happy to see the world becoming so obsessed with Keanu Reeves over anybody else.
He's the funniest guy, too, because all throughout his career, he's been massive, and then he kind of fades away for a bit, and then he'll get another massive movie, and then he'll fade away for a bit. But this, like, since John Wick, he has not gone anywhere, and he's just in everything. And even his quieter little movies, he's great. So it's so good to see everyone love Keanu, because I've always thought he was fantastic. I love almost everything he's in, even his shit movies. He's worth watching in, you know. So he's a guy that gives his best. So I was excited to see him in CD Projekt Red's Cyberpunk as well.
And that little bit where he points to the release date was... like,
yeah.
What up? Oh, that's when you can tell...
He may as well have just dabbed and done it, really.
You can tell that he's, like, not as invested in this as, like, a lot of the hardcore fans are. But you can tell, like, he's having fun and making some kind of effort, and it works.
Yeah. He's had a crack at it.
Yeah.
Good on him. That was a real highlight of the Xbox show, too. I mean... I actually thought Xbox did pretty well this year.
Yeah, let's rewind this back to the beginning of the Xbox conference.
My thoughts are there was a couple of notable absences in Forza and Fable. I mean, we got a Forza Horizon expansion, but we didn't get the new Forza game, which many expected.
Before you go on, how long did the whole conference clock in at? I actually didn't watch the whole thing.
Hour and a half or so?
That's actually 90? Not bad.
Yeah, it was pretty... zippy too. It didn't feel like there was a lot of dead spots. It kept moving pretty well. The couple of exciting things I thought were the new Elite controller, because that is the greatest controller known to man, and I am super keen for a new one. I really
and it's forwards compatible, which is handy.
Fine.
Yes, and yeah, Microsoft buying Double Fine. That's a big get.
I actually said "oh shit" out loud when I saw that.
Yeah, that's like, you know, it's another one. What Microsoft have done with these studios they've purchased, they've specifically targeted studios that everyone on the planet knows are extremely talented, but have always struggled for money. And they've gone straight for them and grabbed them. So you've got Double Fine, you've got Obsidian, you've got InXile, super talented developers that have always had to crowdfund, or they've, you know, been caught short with money and had buggy games released as a result. So
I remember that they're games that have very dedicated like fan bases, maybe not the biggest, but like people who will buy a console for their games.
Exactly, and they're and you just have to wonder, like, with a Microsoft bankrolled Double Fine game or a Microsoft bankrolled Obsidian game, like, the sky's almost the limit with some of these creative guys. And I just hope
I see that benefiting some studios more than others. I don't see the Microsoft paycheck, no matter what Tim Schafer said in his little, did either any of you see video, about a 30 second long video put out where, why did we do it? Well, Microsoft walked in with a big check, and so here we are, basically. It was brilliant the way he did.
He had a Microsoft t-shirt on and a Zune. Yeah. He actually found a Zune.
Yeah, he had a Zune.
And a little subtitle that said, this is actually a Zune.
Yeah.
I don't see it benefiting a studio like that much because of the style of game that they make. It just gives them the security.
I don't know, but...
But studios like Ninja Theory and Obsidian, who have always been thereabouts, I think about Alpha Protocol, for example, and how close that was. That if they just had this steady, guaranteed, viable source of money if they needed it, what that game could have potentially been. And I see it really benefiting them. Because otherwise, I don't see those... We all, like those of us who really immerse ourselves in the games business, know these studios for the games they create and how excellent they are. But otherwise, I don't think they really tip the needle much in any competition, quote-unquote, between Xbox and PlayStation. But I don't see...
I don't think you can...
Anyone other than maybe Obsidian...
I don't think you can say
at this
that
point,
until...
Tipping the needle.
They
we see what
their
they do
products with that. That
well, that's where the bankroll maybe makes a bit of a difference. But I think through some of those studios, and I don't, for example, a Double Fine, I don't see Double Fine doing anything much different because of the style of game that they make, and it's brilliant. I love what they make, and I don't see them changing
that
very much.
Brutal Legend, for example,
I think it
would
opens
have been
up
a whole different game if they'd had a steady, because that was a troubled ass development, Brutal.
Yeah, and EA that was EA, right, that came in.
And it went through about three or four different publishers. You know, you have to think, what happens to that game if they've got, you know, a bankroll?
They just don't have to worry.
Consistency.
They don't have to worry. And Tim did say in that thing, he said the biggest thing is, he said 30% of, and I was watching the interview with him, with Jeff Keighley after the conference, and he said the biggest thing for him is, I don't have to spend 30% of my time pitching ideas to different publishers. I don't have to spend 30% of my time finding money. I don't have to, he said, all that stuff that takes away from what I want to do, and that's make games. He said he personally hasn't had much input in any games they've put out, just because he's been so busy.
He has
busy
to be a manager.
Like, be the manager and the boss and doing all that money shit that he clearly doesn't like. So that's exciting to free someone like Tim Schafer up to do what everyone knows he does so well, and he's clearly got a great sense of humor and things
and
like that.
All of those developers together means that Microsoft will have a slate of exclusives.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Microsoft's really on the right track
at
the moment.
Tighter games, like you think. Sorry, Matt, but like, say, Last of Us 2 looks friggin' phenomenal. Do you think Naughty Dog could make, like, even if they had, like, all the money in the world, they could make it look that good if they had to, like, develop for multiple different platforms?
No, you can't.
No, they couldn't.
And that's where this is an advantage for especially the bigger ones like Ninja Theory and Obsidian, I think, will really benefit from having stability in that sense as well.
Yeah, sorry, just to be clear, when I was talking about tipping the needle, I don't mean for those studios. All these studios are going to be better off for it. There's absolutely no doubting that. I'm just talking about certainly at least a part of Xbox's thinking is, how is this studio going to benefit us going forward, and the Xbox platform and visibility and all those sorts of things. And at the moment, based on X number of years for the respective studios. On their own, they're not necessarily going to do that. So what I'm hoping for is that there's a the collective, the sum of their parts is going to actually, like you were talking about, Tim, how, you know, there's hardcore little bases for, say, a Tim Schafer game, and then there's your hardcore base that loves Obsidian. They might go and buy a console just for that. That hopefully the sum of all those might come together, because otherwise on their own, I don't think they have much.
They're just impact. Having that many exclusive games is going to have a huge impact.
And so many different varieties of games too, because they're all kind of very varied in what they produce.
That's one big thing they're doing versus what PlayStation's doing, where a lot of PlayStations, for as much as I love them,
you feel the DNA of a PlayStation game in all of them.
Yeah.
And that's a great set of DNA, but it is consistent across most,
which is
titles.
Weird because at the 360 era, I felt like the most
it was consistent, exactly.
Like, actually, PlayStation's still more varied than I think peak 360 was, but...
Yeah, for sure. Well, it was just Halo.
Interesting to, like, mention Ninja Theory, and, like, how not Ninja Theory does their new game look?
Apparently it was in development 2 years before Microsoft picked them up, too, which they were very clear to point out because...
2015.
A lot of people immediately went, oh, Microsoft have made them do a multiplayer shooter, and they really wanted to make sure, no, this was just something we were working on when Microsoft grabbed us.
No, if so, Microsoft had bought Ninja Theory with Ninja Theory's back catalogue in mind, they would not have commissioned Bleeding Edge, because this looks nothing like anything they've ever done.
And good luck to them. It apparently plays really well. I was reading a couple of previews of it, and yeah, it seems like a lot of fun.
I am a little scared that this is going to turn out like a little bit...
Overwatching?
Like Onrush. No, more like Onrush, where it's going to be a very good game
that no
with
one
its multiplayer focus that will
get no attention
for about 3 days.
Yep.
The big thing going for that one is the fact that they've announced it, and then, I can't remember, is it a beta that's available by the end of this month like that? So, like, people will hear about it, and then by the time that becomes available, it's still somewhat fresh in the minds. I mean, people will be talking about E3 for the next 2 or 3 weeks still. So that game's still going to get raised in some degree of the conversation. So that maybe bodes well for it, because then people can get into it nice and quick, and then from there, who knows when it actually comes out. But it's a starting point.
Yeah, I think, and it seems like a little side project too, to be honest. So it doesn't seem like it's taking up the main chunk of resources at Ninja Theory. So it probably is being put out in mind of a $20, $30, $40 title that, is a good bit of fun on the side and will be perfect fit in Game Pass. So, Game Pass, I today upgraded to the Ultimate Game Pass. So I've got it on my PC as well. Super easy, super quick, and I've now got 100-odd games on my PC, and there's a lot there that I want to play.
Do you have it with the new client as well?
Yeah. The new client's so much better than the shitty old Microsoft
good.
Store.
that was what I wanted to ask primarily, is your experience with the new client, because the old client is a pile of
terrible.
Shit.
No, this is much better, and it's all game-focused, and it's none of that shitty app stuff that they've got in there.
It's incredible how quickly this has turned into the Netflix of video games.
It has, honestly,
I think we've talked about it in multiple occasions and in multiple episodes in the past, how, you know, Microsoft just wants to be in your everything.
Yep. Because money's on games. Money's not on consoles. Money's on the
services. Yeah. So if they can take a little slice out of everywhere, that does them good. If they can embed themselves into every ecosystem that you have in your home through your... You know, you've got the thing on your PC, which links up to the thing under your TV, which links up to your Switch, which links up to your PlayStation or whatever. Like, if they can just sort of just have their tendrils everywhere, that does them good. And that's what they've been doing for quite some time with the crossplay and the buy it once and you can play on both PC and Xbox and all of that stuff, and then putting Minecraft on everything.
Honestly, the only worry I have with it all is video game industry is terrible at keeping its own history. And if people don't own the games, that becomes even harder. I mean, as a consumer, it's fantastic, and as a family guy with two kids, can you imagine growing up as a kid and if $15 a month you got 300 and something fucking games? Like, you just wouldn't know. Your head would explode.
The concept of PlayStation Plus alone,
you know?
Like, before you go that much... Because, yeah. I mean, a new game was an event. It's like $100.
You'd save up.
And you'd play it for months.
You play it for... That's the thing you've got for that year.
Yeah.
Until next Christmas.
Your birthday game. I remember... Oh, I must have spent 30, 40 hours in Dark Forces. There's no way you'd put that amount of time into a first-person shooter these days. Especially a linear one. You'd finish it and you'd be done with it and you'd be happy. But, yeah, you wouldn't play it again and again and again and again and again like you did back then. So this is this concept of having so much entertainment for such a little monthly outlay is... Like, my kids' pocket money easily... I mean, I get it, so they just tap off mine. But if they wanted to, there's no reason that kids couldn't do it. Like, that $5 a week pocket money is more than they need to have this service. So, yeah, it's crazy good value for families and kids.
Or anybody, honestly. Like, if I had an Xbox, I would probably... Or if my PC were more up to date.
Yeah, it's just... I think it's been done well. They've done it right straight out of the bat. They haven't farted around with like PlayStation have. They've kind of dabbled and dipped in and they've never really committed to it. Microsoft went all in and as a result, it's just great. It's really good.
Yeah. One thing that sort of interested me is... Well, we haven't even talked about the new console. But there's a lot of forward-looking things, but I'm also... Yeah. There's a lot of, what? Was that... What did Tim say?
Nothing. He was pointing his finger at you. Just saying...
Oh, was he? Oh. I just want to say, like, some old... This old, like, nostalgic stuff is coming back, too, with, Phantasy Star Online 2, which is weird. Battletoads.
Baldur's Gate.
Gate 3.
I was watching the...
Age of Empires 2.
Yep.
I'm just sure listing things off. Yeah,
but like I was watching the Giant Bomb stream of this when I got home, and it's hard, I'm going to steal directly from them, and it's super harsh when it makes sense, and they're watching Battletoads like, this totally looks like the sort of game that Devolver would pass on.
Oh, look, I don't mind it. I mean, the question is, does a traditional 2D beat 'em up even hold up these days?
Oh, Microsoft Flight Simulator? Sorry, I just...
Yeah,
That was out of the nowhere, wasn't it?
I like...
At least it's on Game
Pass. I like the look of their little notebook RPG thingy.
Yeah, that looked cool.
That looks really cute.
Oh, RPG time.
Yeah.
The RPG time that you couldn't actually discern what that
with
said
the
at
font.
The time.
Yep.
That looks actually really interesting.
Like Paper Mario and Lord of the Rings had a child.
Mm. Some very interesting sort of kid friendly. I mean, this is separate from the Xbox conference now, but I'm looking down the list of trailers on the Kotaku website. All the trailers from E3 2019. There's a whole bunch of like really like kid friendly. Stuff like RPG time. I think Spiritfarer looks good.
Was that like, because Cyberpunk was followed up by a game about hugging, effectively, as far as I could tell.
No, 12 minutes.
Baldo, 12 minutes. Ari and the Fantastic. Secret of Seasons. I mean, they're just a whole bunch of stuff that's looking really colorful and kid friendly.
Yeah. There was
plenty of good stuff in that space. Yeah, absolutely. And there's obviously plenty you didn't mention there, like your Way to the Woods.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you
know, yeah.
You already mentioned Spiritfarer, which that one blows my mind. Thunder Lotus, the team responsible for that, did Jotun only 2 years ago. They did Sundered the year after. They've put out 3 games in 4 years at this rate. Now, obviously, we don't have a release date for that particular game yet, for Spiritfarer yet, but they're churning these games out.
Then Jotun and what's the other one? Sundered. They are very different from Spiritfarer.
Yeah.
My goodness.
And yet, all the same studio.
I liked...
Which is kind of crazy.
The Microsoft had a lot of quality indie ID at Xbox titles. And they've locked them all down to be also on Game Pass day one. So, yeah, I think this is where Game Pass really is great, because there's a lot of people, like we as games writers and stuff, we look for indie titles because we realize what sort of quality they have to offer. But the Joe Blog Public doesn't. But if they've got it there in their library with a chance to have a stab at it for no cost, I mean, you know, it's...
That's one of the best parts about something like Game Pass. You're inclined to try things. I would not play Flight Simulator, and that's not indie, but I would not play Flight Simulator, but the fact it's coming to Game Pass.
I actually know that I'm not going to play Flight Simulator.
Come on. No?
Me ordinarily, no, it doesn't fit into my thing, and it's something I wouldn't justify the cost.
Had a manual that was bigger than the Encyclopedia Britannica.
No, I normally wouldn't, because they always look like dog shit, but this one looks really good.
No, ordinarily, I wouldn't. But because this is going to be available on Game Pass, I sit back and go, worst case, I put a night or two into this, it doesn't tickle my pickle, and I move on.
That's a disturbing phrase. I've never heard tickle my pickle.
I was
going to
say,
All right, I'm fascinated that we've gotten this deep into the Microsoft conference, like nobody's talking about Halo or Gears.
Because we know them. They're known.
What they showed of Gears was rubbish.
I mean, it's a nice new mode,
and
but was
Halo wasn't much better.
It was a CG trailer.
Yeah, it's a CG trailer, both Halo and...
Such a missed opportunity, that one, for Gears.
But I think they're holding... Like I said at the start, I think they're holding for Gamescom. I think they're holding.
Is that escape mode... Is that escape mode essentially just like Left 4 Dead? Like Gears Left 4 Dead?
No, apparently you've got to get in, plant a bomb, and get out. That's the mode. So it's another... I guess it's another a PvE multiplayer mode. So... Mm. I like the idea of it, like the concept of it sounds cool.
It actually seemed
kind
of cool.
And it fits that Gears kind of horde and stuff, which has always been the best. Like competitive multiplayer in Gears never excited me. The horde mode was where I had all the fun, so I'm happy with that.
I had no problem with the idea of staggering out these different modes. So presumably, maybe Gamescom's the campaign, for example, and some other event is horde and whatever the case may be. E3 should have been the campaign one.
Yeah.
That's your biggest stage.
I think so.
And that's the one that all eyes are on. Obviously, Gamescom is still massive. Certainly, in terms of the number of people that get there, it's bigger than E3. But this is the one that everyone casts their eyes towards, and that's the one where they should have really made the big statement when it came to the campaign, and they coughed that up. And I get that they wanted to show off a new mode, and I understand why, because it could easily get lost in the shuffle if you did it at one of those smaller... quote-unquote lesser events or whatever, but I don't know if they necessarily made the right choice.
It felt a bit awkward to me. It felt awkward.
Yeah.
But as for Halo, sign me up. I mean, release game, it makes sense that it's the launch title.
They're not going to show any actual gameplay until they're really gearing up for the next console.
Yeah, absolutely. It works. I'm happy. I dig the Halo... canon. I've always enjoyed it, especially the early books that Eric Nyland wrote.
Those are good books, actually.
They're really good books. He's a really good author. So, I'm happy. More Master Chief, sign me up. Bring it on. I'll know what it is. It's Halo. I'm happy with that.
Hey, I want to take a hard turn here, Matt. How do you feel about more Commander Keen?
I am fucking filthy about that.
No.
And you knew it. That's why you said it to me. I didn't even
recognize a beta's bait until it was in your mouth.
Oh, God. What the fuck were they... Just this sort of shit annoys me. They did it with EA. Paul brought it up. They did it last year, was it, with EA Command & Conquer Rivals?
Oh, with Command & Conquer Rivals, yep.
You don't need... Okay, even if this is the greatest mobile game ever, it doesn't need to have Commander Keen slapped on it because it has nothing to do with Commander Keen. Like, that's what annoys me. Like, Commander Keen is known by everyone as a 2D platformer. This is a world where we have some fantastic 2D platformers. And it's actually been a bit quiet on that front at the moment, too. We haven't had a Rayman game for a while. The last Mario was pretty underwhelming because it was just a repeat. You know, so there's a space for a good quality 2D platformer of that style, and instead they go for shitty mobile fucking free-to-pay bullshit that just taints the nostalgia.
But come on, did you not hear them? They've had two number one mobile games, so clearly this is going to be the third one.
Just made me shake my head in disgust. It was terrible.
There was a notable silence from the Player 2 Twitter feed for about 5 minutes yeah. after that announcement, as it was quite clear that you were just sobbing uncontrollably into...
I played so much Commander Keen as a kid, and...
I never thought the Commander Keen games were that good, but I get that it's something people have legitimate nostalgia for one way or the other.
And honestly, like, if they were to come out and say, here's a new Commander Keen game, it's in the style of Rayman Legends... Money down. Bloody oath. Give it to me. I want it. And you know, I was a bit excited that Ukulele's doing that too, because I frankly think it'll be an easier task for them to do that 2D sort of platformer instead of the 3D route they went down. So I think there's always space for good, high-quality 2D platformers, not shitty fucking free-to-play mobile games.
I don't want to get people find something, like, positive, because we've obviously shifted towards Bethesda.
Doom.
From Bethesda, Doom.
Doom looks great. it was a really weird conference, and it had a really bad pacing, but Doom looked good. Doom looked really good.
One thing that I thought was a bit weird about the Doom one is the fact that, like, with previous content they've put out for that game so far, they spoke about slash also showed the grappling hook thing
in this gameplay.
And in an extended gameplay thing there, they didn't show that at all. Now, the person playing, it must have been a machine playing. That was unbelievable the way they were just motoring through them. It was awesome to watch. But I would have loved to have seen how the grappling actually works in that arena combat, because so far all they've shown has been more for traversal purposes. So I would have liked to have seen that in action, and you kind of swinging from one spot to another.
I think
and
the
then
map they
what about
the
swinging from one enemy to the other? And
yeah, because so far, all it's kind of been is for platforming purposes rather than. And obviously, platforming is an important part to the Doom combat as well, but how you could kind of string that into a larger sequence that you're getting up to there, I think that was probably the only thing missing from it, because otherwise that gameplay demo was fantastic.
Honestly,
it was
exactly what I would have done, you know, way back in 93 when they made, or 94 when they made Doom 2, it was essentially just more Doom. I would have been happy with that approach again if they had just made more Doom levels, because I really liked the last one. But they seem to be taking it to the next level. And hey, they're doing some cool shit. The levels seem more open from what we've seen from a couple of different trailers. The enemies, there's some really cool new enemies that, you know, you've really got to mix it up. And that whole focus on always moving seems to be even more important. Like, if you stand still to line up a shot, you're dead. Just keep moving, son. Keep moving. So, I'm really, and it feels different from everything else out there. You know, every other first-person shooter out there, kind of they can blend a little bit. Whereas Doom is its own thing, and there is no mistaking it for anything else.
Which is ironic, since the first-person shooter for the longest time was called the Doom clone.
Exactly. You know, it's great to see. But,
Well. I mean, talking about clones, how excited are you about the Fallout 76 Battle Royale mode?
That was the other part I was really shitty about. Like, let's put a Battle Royale mode in a game where combat is fucking terrible to begin with and hope for the best.
In a game that historically is supposed to be about kind of being lonely in a wasteland.
Yep. And they can't get the servers right with 16 people on it, let alone 54 or whatever they said.
52 player.
52, so the last person, I guess, becomes the thing of Area 50 or Vault 51. Yep. It was a weird sort of reveal. I was as someone who's vocally, very vocally against Fallout 76 at the end of last year, I was glad to see that doubling down their support for it. I hope that EA and Anthem, and BioWare take a bit of a look at what they're currently doing and maybe attempt to replicate the same sort of approach. And look, it may happen because they are obviously 2 or 3 months further behind in their cycle, given the release dates. So it may still happen, and E3 just didn't align nicely for them. But I was glad to see they were doing that. That particular component, though, was a bit of a weird one.
The other stuff, bring it on. Let's make it more like Fallout, which is what everyone wants anyway. So let's make it more like Fallout. So,
I've never heard such NPCs. Well, outside of the Keanu Reeves one. NPCs, what the hell?
There is actually...
Great, we can talk to the computer in a game where I'm mic'd up and talking to as many people as I like. Let me talk to this computer here.
Yeah. Todd Howard could apologize for, like, a mass murder, though, couldn't he? He gets up on...
Todd Howard does need to apologize for one thing. He should not, under any circumstance, have brought up the Elder Scrolls 6 or Starfield in that conference, because we knew they weren't going to be there. Don't even tease us, because as soon as he mentioned those two names, you heard, like, breaths being drawn there from everyone, and I certainly felt like, oh, hang on, was this all a lie? Yeah. All the stuff that Pete Hines was saying beforehand, it's going to be there? And then, and we're working on those games. Moving right along. Like, Todd, come on.
Well, like, the thing is... Right,
I know it was only a small thing, but he should have kept his mouth shut.
Elder Scrolls 6, I mean, what are you thinking? I mean, it's just going to be more Elder Scrolls, but I'm really interested in Starfield. I want to see what they're going to do in a sci-fi setting. And it was a bit of a disappointment that they weren't going to come with that. And
they did have some nice reveals, though, but they were all just CG. Like, what was it? Deathloop and from Arkane. Which,
interesting
idea.
It'll
be great because it's Arkane. I have faith in them. But,
and Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yeah, that really
looks interesting. So.
I do awesome. Appreciate that they're finally making a prequel to Tokyo Jungle.
That's what it is, right?
But yeah, that Jennifer Ghostwire, I forget her name, but she was fantastic. And they were very clear on stressing that it wasn't survival horror. So
I'm not sure how though, because it looks kind of eerie and creepy.
Shit, right? Not as creepy as that Blair Witch game that Paul's going to review for us, but
get not a chance. I'm done taking these horror games.
And am I the only one who wants to play Youngblood?
I want to play Youngblood. Hell yeah!
It looks a hell. Like, maybe this is a theme for Bethesda, but it looks a lot more action focused than Wolfenstein 2 was. Like.
Yeah,
a lot more Kill Bill Volume 1 than Inglourious Bastards.
It's hard to demo, I guess.
But there's a lot of stabbing Nazis.
You know, and that's what people want to see in a demo.
The approach that they took with Wolfenstein 2, though, and actually with the first one as well, was they would always have like this awkward moment of like meeting one of like the nemesis and like the dialogue that would go with it. Like the whole strawberry milkshake thing.
Yeah.
Whereas this was like stab, 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 stab!
People know now what the Wolfenstein games are, so they don't. And the story beats, honestly, are the best parts of those games. As good as the action is, and it's very, very good. The story beats in those games are fantastic. So show the action, surprise with the story. I'm happy for it. It's apparently bigger than any other Wolf game too, which surprised the hell out of me.
And then considering I'm top it all off, you've got Cyberpilot as well,
and that'll be just a fun VR thing. But yeah.
Shooting Nazis from a mech, right? Is that,
right.
That's the whole idea.
You're down with that, Ken, right?
Ken's out to go and buy a VR.
So wait, sorry, which one was this?
Cyberpilot. Wolfenstein.
Cyberpilot. Wolfenstein.
So, I haven't seen it, actually.
Yeah, so you're basically in a mech.
You're in a mech. Shooting Nazis.
I mean, we're going on a bit of a tangent, but I wish I could use a VR headset.
Oh, I was going to say, Ken, I'm only up an hour up the road. You can always
drive.
I think it's an illness thing.
Well, my eyes don't really do it well. And also just wearing glasses, putting a headset on is just a pain in the butt.
Yeah, Hope has VR
glasses.
I know, she's small set to wear
VR
headset.
Yeah. Hope said that she's got a special... I mean, she's got an older pair of glasses which fits comfortably underneath PSVR. But
it's a bit of dedication there. I mean, VR's main problem at the moment, I think, is already the hassle. Like, that needs to get simplified if it's ever going to become that big.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking about the hassle and those sort of things, I've been really tempted by Oculus Quest recently.
Yeah, wireless.
Seeing some of the coverage of that, and then the fact that it's completely portable, like it is what people kind of wanted or at least imagined VR to be out the gate, that's really tempting me. Now I don't have, what is it, $700, $800 to just splash on it off, at any given moment, contrary to what Houston might say with all these collector's editions.
Excuse me, but I bought the Doom Collector's Edition, and what was the other one you bought today? Cyberpunk.
And they pre-ordered a regular ass copy of that.
It's more me putting my stake in the ground, because then I can change my mind at any time.
I actually do kind of get that.
And if I do change my mind, I just transfer the money over and it's already another game paid off.
Or two.
Yep.
Or two or three, or in the case of Cyberpunk, four or five.
Okay, so one, a couple of games we want to cover before we wrap this thing up. First one is... how likely do you think this Final Fantasy VII release date is Square going, oh crap, we need to get it out this gen?
Yeah.
Nah, that's solid.
Yeah, I reckon that's what it is, though. I reckon they're pushing now. They've realised, oh, we faffed about for 5 fucking years. We better get something out.
And now we've got 2 huge cyberpunk RPGs launching within like a month of each other.
Yeah.
But see, Final Fantasy, because of the episodic thing, I think it'll be 10, 15 hours and possibly done, and you're only getting more out of that if you opt in to, you know, dive into, I don't know if they're going to add side quests and other, you know, other content.
They've
we haven't
only
seen
shown
before.
Midgar so
obviously
far.
It depends on,
they haven't shown Tifa at all, which is,
and I would imagine she's featured in a trailer. I can't remember which one, but she's featured in one recently. I could have sworn I saw
I was going to say, is this just going to be like one part of the game as opposed to the whole game?
We think it's still episodic.
Yeah, it's episode 1. Yeah, it is. They reconfirmed after the state of play recently that it is still episodic. So I would say, I would imagine it's part one that's coming. Yeah, March 3rd, 2020.
Look, it's just disc 1 of 7.
Part one gets you to. I thought about it maybe being, look, and I'm only speculating obviously, but I instantly thought, okay, it's a 3-parter, one disc. Like one each of the three
disc
discs.
Disc 3 of the original game was not
one disc
very
is
much
one episode.
Content.
And that's, maybe they'll tweak that balance between disc 2 and disc 3 to kind of balance it out, because the quest at the end of Midgar isn't huge. It's big, but it's not ridiculous.
It would be funny.
So ridiculously against it anyway.
But it would be funny if at the end of like the first part it literally says like insert disc 2.
I would honestly enjoy
and
that.
Then everyone's sitting back going, hey, what? Where? Huh?
I'd pay that, actually.
It's under your chair.
You've got to wait 5 years for disc 2, though.
Yeah, you've got to wait
5 years. So I'm really curious if this is going to become like a really messy cross-gen scenario.
I have a feeling.
I just hope it's simply forwards compatible. I'd like to think that it's just forwards compatible, and if you pick up a PS5, and I'm going to work with that one because they do have their timed exclusivity for PlayStation when it comes to this, that you get your PS5, episode 2 maybe comes out shortly afterwards, touch wood, and
your save just works.
You just download the game and your save just transfers across. Similar
to the start,
what have we seen?
Call of Duty and a few other things where you paid like $5 or something and you could upgrade it to the next gen copy.
But that was a thing because of the fact that the PS3, PS4 didn't play nice. But PS4 to PS5, Xbox One to Project Scarlet, they are meant to be forwards compatible, so you can just download your game straight onto it. So I don't expect that issue at all. I reckon we'll just get it free and just pick up exactly where you left off.
It could take
cost
them 5 years
to some sort of patch
out,
that
though.
Updates
100%. It will do.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that.
And in the meantime, they'll announce Final Fantasy 16, Kingdom Hearts 4, and though I'm actually tipping Final Fantasy 16 might be tomorrow, but Kingdom Hearts 4 or Dragon Quest 27, and it'll just get completely out of hand.
Right, well, to like bring this close, is anybody at all excited about Star Wars?
Yeah, I liked what I saw.
Yeah,
you mean Jedi Titan Fallen Order?
Yeah.
Bug squishing.
It's just straight up. the wall done. Run is just straight up Titanfall.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. Come on,
look,
third person Titanfall with laser swords.
I think it could be a lot of fun. I mean, it's kind of reserved optimism I have for it. I liked the look of the combat. I don't think it was the greatest demo to show, though, because people went in expecting flashy, over-the-top sort of stuff, whereas this is clearly not.
Just kind of traversal, squashing some bugs.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, there was some interesting use of force powers in there, like I particularly like the one where he slowed down time on the actual laser bolt, then picked up the guy and put him in front of it. Like that's cool. But you know, I'm excited for it just based on my trust for Respawn, to be honest.
Mm.
Titanfall 2's campaign was very good.
Very, very good. And I think it's going to be good. I just don't think they demoed it really well. That's I think what its biggest problem was.
Yeah.
I gleaned enough from that gameplay demo, which I 100% agree, it wasn't perhaps the best vertical slice that they picked, but then I pair that with the trailer that was shown during the Xbox conference, and suddenly I have exactly what I need, because in that trailer they showed some of those higher stakes, faster paced action sequences that we perhaps expect from something Star Wars related. And then I mix in the combat that I saw from the demo, and suddenly I'm very happy.
Well, one more, it's definitely what, like, I mean, EA at this point, like, desperately needs even, like, a Force Awakens kind of...
Yeah.
Force Unleashed, sorry. Kind of, like, they just need even, like, a B-plus sort of adequate action game to, like, because they've been squandering this license.
Honestly, though, like, there is so many easy wins that they've got options for, like... a HD remake of Knights of the Old Republic. Like, why...
Done.
They don't even have to do anything except make some pretty graphics. Everything else is done for them.
But didn't they put it on mobile? Didn't they do that? Yeah, is that right?
That came out yonks ago.
Did they come to mobile?
On mobile. But yeah, that's something super simple they could do with this license that would make everyone happy again. But they don't. They keep doing dumb shit and wasting it.
All right, what a positive note! What a positive note to go out on.
Devolver Digital. I am very excited about Fall Guys.
That
looks like. Do you know that old Japanese game show?
Takeshi's Castle.
It looks like Takeshi's Castle.
Callback.
It looks like that. It's like
I've been
that
watching MXC with my boys. Actually,
it's that plus Battle Royale. I mean. Takeshi's Castle was a battle royale, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty much that. It's just obstacle courses and just silly, pudgy, colorful dudes.
And very Devolver.
Very Devolver. It looks good. And Carrion looks so good.
And Devolver are releasing a lot of
cool
game.
Yes.
like
an arcade. You can pre-order for like $5,000 or something.
Enter the Gungeon light gun game. Holy shit! Because only Devolver can do that. And that actual their knockoff thing that they joked about in the conference about having
Devolver bootleg.
Yeah, it's available now. You can get it on Steam.
It's real. It's like $7.50 Aussie.
Those guys are fucking nuts. I love them. So much fun.
Yeah.
Real highlight for me overall was Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I'm very biased towards that game as it is, but seeing it again during that Xbox conference just makes me think that even in a year that's going to have Cyberpunk and quite likely The Last of Us Part 2, Ori is still a serious Game of the Year contender in that year.
Wow.
Castlevanias.
What?
Not necessarily, but Ori just speaks to me... on a level that few games have. I think it's kind of that emotional aspect coupled with obviously excellent gameplay. It ticks all the right boxes. And I mean, everyone knows, like I just mentioned The Last of Us in that conversation, everyone knows how one-eyed PlayStation I can be, especially when it comes to Naughty Dog. But Ori is up to its eyeballs in it. If kind of what I'm seeing paired with what I played at PAX last year is anything to go by. I think it's in a very good place.
Outer Worlds for me. I think Outer Worlds at this point, from what I've seen, will be my game of the year. Like, I think Obsidian have got to really fumble the ball for me to not thoroughly enjoy that game. So.
And you can get it on Game Pass.
But, you know, that Obsidian black humour that they've had way back when they were Black Isle Studios and doing, you know, Fallout 2 and things like that. It's there. It's dark. It's funny. And the gameplay, the gunplay looked really, really interesting. Like, much more interesting than I thought it would be. So, yeah, I am super, super keen for that one.
Oh, well.
What about you, Tim? What was there that really stuck with you?
Keanu Reeves moment. No, the stuff that I don't, there's not a single game there that I am desperate to get my hands on. I do really, really well. Cyberpunk, we already kind of knew about. That and like the Double Fine acquisition were like the two. Like, obviously, there's not a specific thing coming out that I'm looking forward to because of those. But the, like in terms of E3 moments, those are up there.
Yeah. Ken.
Ken, are you still awake?
Barely.
Oh, no. What did you see?
I mean, nothing. I mean, like I said, I didn't watch the conferences myself, so I've been just trawling through Twitter and Kotaku and all the other sites and looking at trailers and such.
You know they're on our own site as well.
Sorry?
You know they're on the Player 2 website as well.
Yeah, I know.
Matt did a fantastic job of compiling everything.
That was legitimately the first place I went to this morning. Like, not even... there is one thing that looks very interesting for me. Tales of Arise.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Very pretty looking.
Very different art style for the Tales franchise.
And then combat looks very different as well. Looks very interesting. I think that looks good.
Yeah, I'd like to see that series return to not throw away status again, because I feel like it just became like a factory at some point.
They were really coming into
that late PS3
era.
They
were really coming into their own for a little while with Tales of Symphonia, but
that was a long time ago now.
Yeah, I know.
Xbox.
Well, Symphonia was huge. Vesperia, you know, many people kind of argue that's where it peaked with Vesperia. I'd argue Symphonia, but I can see the argument for Vesperia.
And then it became.
And then all of a sudden you got Zillia 1, Zillia 2, Zestiria, Berseria. They started churning them out really, really quickly in the end. They're in the last couple of years.
All of which has nothing to do with E3. Let's wrap this up.
So Tales of Arise is.
All right, Ken, thank you very much. Do you have anything you want to say before you go to sleep?
No, that's pretty much it.
Pretty much it, nothing to pimp.
Oh, I've got a couple of videos up on Player 2 at the moment, trying to get back into it. And follow me at Pixel Hunt on Twitter.
Well, Paul, you want to shout out to one of your 50 other podcasts while you're here?
Yeah.
I did make a cameo appearance on another podcast before, but don't worry about that. It's not Player 2 related. Dev Diary is my podcast that I run with developers from all around the industry, so go check that out. And then when it comes to E3 related stuff, going to help out Matt whenever and wherever I can, but there's obviously a few videos on the Player 2 YouTube channel as well. Insider episodes dedicated to each of the big conferences, so maybe go and check those out.
Cool. And Matt, thank you very much for like taking the bullet to the head, so to speak, in terms of getting up at God knows when.
Yeah, it won't be too bad, and I'm not doing the PC game show. No, I'll just catch the highlights later. But head over to the E3 hub on Player 2. It's the first menu item you see as you log on. I've got all our E3 shit there, and it'll be up there, so you can catch up on all of our dribble.
Please click it. He has actually worked really hard on this.
I'm a sucker for it.
Yep. And man, I actually still need to catch up on everything, come to think of it. It's been a long ass day, I think, for everybody.
It just never ends. Between the conferences themselves, and then you start seeing the interviews starting to pop up, you know, what Jeff Keighley's doing, and all of a sudden you see IGN's managed to snag this person, and all of a sudden you're bouncing between...